Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is indeed, and welcome back again, Marcus. Let's talk coronavirus.
Yeah, so I thought it's in the news a lot. We give you a bit of an update and a little bit of background information about the virus. So pretty much everyone knows now there's this new type of virus that's emerged in Wuhan province in China. The latest, as of I think a day or so ago, infections in China just passed 20,000, with about 420, a little more than 420 fatalities so far. All in China, apart from two, one in Hong Kong, and I'm not sure where the other one is. And the World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus outbreak a global health emergency. It's a special focus on trying to find vaccines and solve the problems.
Yeah, right. What does it mean if it's declared a global health emergency?
I think funds get earmarked try and stop the spread, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. So I just thought I'd give you a little bit of background about it. So corona actually refers to the shape of the virus.
Okay.
So there's a distinctive shape. And it's a large group of viruses. They're common in mammals and birds in particular. And in rare cases, and it has been known to happen before, in rare cases, they can spread to humans from animals in a process called zoonosis. And this is the seventh, this new virus, this coronavirus, is the seventh known human coronavirus. SARS was one, and that was the third. So there's been a few since then. Some have mild symptoms, but some, like SARS, for instance, have SARS is a severe acute respiratory syndrome, and that had a lot of fatalities. MERS was another one, Middle East respiratory syndrome, and both of those were very much more dangerous, I think, than the current virus. So the scientists are trying to understand how the virus is spreading. It seems like it can spread amongst humans, but it's not clear how routinely, how easily it's how virulent it is, how easily it can spread. Early severe cases did cause a lot of concern, but this concern seems to have receded a little bit as many more mild cases have turned up.
And the difference in that being, if it's mild, it might be more treatable. Is that what you're saying?
People are recovering, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So it seems like it's not as deadly as SARS, and SARS had an 11% mortality rate, so quite a high rate. So researchers think it originated in an unknown animal, possibly a bat, in a market in Wuhan, but identifying that animal could help control the current outbreak and help them gauge what the threat is.
So is that why it is necessary to understand that origin?
I think they're trying to figure out whether it could, make that jump again. If there are other animals that have this particular virus, how they're trying to track the spread. They're doing a lot of work to try and find the genetic code, which could offer clues to the origins and how it's spreading. And so labs in Thailand and China have sequenced at least 19 strains from infected people. And that data, those data are publicly available and analysis is sort of ongoing. Mm. Currently, there are no known drugs that can effectively treat human coronavirus infections, and no vaccines are currently licensed. One strategy for trying to treat this illness is to block the receptor that the virus uses to infect humans. So there's some work being done to try and do that.
What does that mean?
So the virus has a structure on the outside, and that's going to somehow bind to something in your body, and if they can block that, stop that from happening, then potentially you won't get infected.
Right.
Yeah. And so with more cases being reported, it's a race really to try and contain the outbreak.
Mm. Thank you for that. Those clarifications. There has been lots of sort of misinformation around this, but also that also an increase in sort of racism and xenophobia directed towards obviously the origin of this. And I'm wondering if you have anything to say in terms of how we do kind of deal with this. Like, what you've provided is quite a factual scientific background to this disease, and it's like you say, it's contextual. There have been ones before, and these things do happen.
Yes.
And it's a matter of then, like you say, containing it or responding to it. So
yeah, and it's important to remember it's not a Chinese virus. It is a virus that originated in China, and there's a difference. But it is having an effect on people's movement. So with the new semester starting here in Auckland, you know, in a few weeks, students are trying to get back from China and finding it very, very difficult. So, you know, there are real implications to the travel bans that are sort of popping up, and in New Zealand especially, and. And so, yeah, you can imagine how that there are prejudices that are that are rising up. But yeah, it is a virus that originated there. It's not a Chinese virus.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll touch on that more with Felix after the break. But on to our second topic, a metallic hydrogen milestone.
Okay, so this is. This is something that scientists have been interested in a while. So hydrogen is as you know, this is a complete right term from what we were just talking about, but scientists have been interested in whether hydrogen, which is the most abundant element in the universe, which is it's a colorless gas normally, whether it can be made to be metallic. There is a lot of sort of thought that maybe some of the bigger planets, like Jupiter, for instance, could have a metallic hydrogen core. The pressure is just so great that it compresses the hydrogen and turns it into a metal, and that could explain why there's such a giant magnetic field around Jupiter that affects, you know, the planets nearby and so on. And so it's as a molecule, it's a very, very simple molecule, but in about 80 years ago, it was predicted that it could behave like a conductor, like a metal. And so there's been a lot of work to try and turn it into a metal, but the pressures involved are incredible. You have to squeeze hydrogen an awful lot. And the way you do that is in a device called a diamond anvil cell. So literally you take the hardest known material, which is diamond, flatten two diamonds, and make a little divot in the top and the bottom, and just push them together really, really hard. And whatever is in that little bit of space between the two diamond anvils gets compressed.
Wow.
Yes, and you can compress to, you know, millions of atmospheric pressures. So once you've compressed this, it's actually really difficult to study what's in that little gap. Okay. So you can push it, but how do you actually get to it and study it? And so the scientists here who were doing this work, they looked at the way that light reflected off the material, the hydrogen in the little cavity there between the two diamond faces, and found that when the pressure reached more than 400 gigapascals, so pascal is a unit of pressure, and 400 gigapascals sounds a lot, but it's 4 million times Earth atmospheric pressure, so it's a lot of pressure.
Wow.
Yeah. And what they found is that when the pressures got that high, I think about 425 gigapascals, the light, the material suddenly became reflective, like a metal. So you know, you have a metal surface, light reflects off it. Whereas when hydrogen is a gas, light just passes straight through. Mm. And so this is evidence. It's not conclusive, but it's evidence that at about that pressure, which was sort of predicted by theory, at that pressure, then possibly hydrogen is turning into a metal.
Wow, yeah. Very cool and predicted by theory. Why would we want to change hydrogen into metal? What's the benefit from that?
We don't.
Is it just like?
I think it's
let's see if it works.
It's understanding materials. Mm. Yeah, understanding how materials behave under super high pressures, and you think 400 million atmospheres, well, we're never going to encounter that. Well, we are not, but in the universe around us, there are plenty of places where pressures are that high or much higher.
Okay, yeah. Let's quickly touch on habitable planets and black holes.
So did you see a few years ago in 2014 the film Interstellar?
Interstellar.
Did you see that film?
With Matthew McConaughey.
With Matthew McConaughey.
Yes, I did indeed. Yeah. And Felix did too, sorry.
Yeah, we've all seen it. Okay, so in that
guessing
in
we
that
liked
film,
it. We all really liked it. Yeah.
Everyone's happy about talking about this now. So in that film, there were planets that seemed to be orbiting a black hole. This is sort of a thought experiment. It's actually an experiment in it was used in a class to teach thermodynamics. And the question is, could a planet, habitable planet, orbit a black hole? In other words, could life have developed on a planet near a black hole?
Or not? Like, as in, could it? Is it possible or not?
Is it possible for that to have happened? Yeah. And so what a black hole is, this thing that sucks in everything around it. It's a gigantic gravitational well. Things tend to fall in. So when we think about black holes, we think about them just eating stuff around them. How could a planet live, you know, first of all, be there stably and be there long enough for life to develop and things like
right.
that? And apparently there is a possibility that this could occur. So although it would be a little bit surreal. So for life to evolve, you need an energy source. And for us, it's the sun. And we also need a place for the energy to go to. You need a heat sink. So we get heat from the sun, but you need also the energy to go somewhere. You can't just mm-hmm. keep heating and heating and heating that. And for us, that's space, the cold of space. So the energy comes in from the sun and is radiated back out into space.
Okay.
Yeah. But for a black hole, the situation is reversed. Okay, the sun, which is now the black hole, is the thing that's cold, and space itself is the heat source. And the heat source is this afterglow from the Big Bang called the cosmic microwave background, which is normally is very, very, very cold. But when it gets close to a black hole, it heats up.
Wow.
Yeah. So you've got this cosmic microwave background that is now warm enough to warm a planet, and the black hole is the heat sink. That's where the heat goes. So there's a heat source. But in order to receive enough heat, the planet would have to be very, very close to the black hole, very close to the event horizon. And normally an object that close would get sucked in. But if the black hole is spinning very, very fast, there's a chance it wouldn't get sucked in. But it would have to spin 1/100,000,000th of a percent less than the speed of light.
Like there's a lot of variables.
There's a lot of stuff. So this is a slight chance here. So this black hole is spinning incredibly fast. It would also have to be very, very big. So they calculated at least 163 million times the sun's mass. The supermassive black hole in our Milky Way is only 4 million times the sun's mass. So we would need to be an extremely large black hole. And the reason is that for smaller black holes, when you approach the event horizon is this point where beyond which light can't escape. Mm. Yeah. And for smaller black holes, tidal forces tend to rip things apart. For bigger black holes, when you reach the end event horizons, the tidal forces are not so great, apparently.
Wow.
Okay, so you won't get ripped apart if the black hole is big enough.
Great.
Which is helpful. It would have to be in a tranquil spot in the galaxy, because if there's lots of stuff floating around being sucked in, that creates a lot of radiation, and it's not going to be a good place to be, you know, fostering life on a new planet if there's huge amounts of radiation being emitted from the black hole. So it would have to be in a very quiet part of the universe. It would be a pretty odd place to look at, and also a pretty odd place to be. About if you're that close to such a big black hole, a year on the black hole would equal to thousands of years, you know, for us.
Wow.
Orbiting an ordinary star.
Sounds like this is a lot. This is a lot required.
But it is possible. There is this faint
and
chance.
And we want to do that because...
We don't.
We are
this
looking
is a thought experiment. This is just a thought experiment
also
to sort of teach thermodynamics.
Tells us that Interstellar was right. Is that what you were saying?
It tells us that Interstellar wasn't as wrong.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, thank you so much, Marcus. That was brilliant. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology. Auckland Transport.